calling the September meeting of the Riders Advisory Council to order. We do have a quorum, and the first item on the agenda will be a public comments. I believe we have three or four people slated to speak. James, will you call on them, please?
Ms. Laura Koshny.
And you can sit there. And just so you know, just in keeping with our general process, you have, each person will be given two minutes. Yeah, and the clock will start, but not going to gavel you off. Start it again, because I'm talking into her time.
Hi, I'm here to beg for the reopening of my bus stop. Everybody should have one of these pages in front of them. Okay. I believe I've got no problem with trying to consolidate and get rid of bus stops if they're too close together. However, my bus stop is at Fairfax Drive, and I think it's North Taylor. It might be North Tyler. I'm old and I can't remember the exact name, but please bear with me. Okay. If you look up on the right, on the right-hand corner, you see 38B, 25A, B, and E bus stop. The bus picks up people there, and then it goes down Stewart Street toward Fairfax Drive. There's a stoplight. It'll stop there. Then it'll make a left, and then it'll stop at the light North Tyler, Taylor Street, and Fairfax Drive. That bus stop, even though it's close by, it's very handy if you take the metro elevator, and it gives you an additional minute of catching the bus. Now, the bus stops at the light. The bus has never, ever, rarely ever attempted to go on the curb, to pick people up at the curb. It just stops right there in the street. Sometimes it's closer to the light. Sometimes it's a little ways down there. But what we do is we know we don't have much time. When the bus stops, we walk on over to the bus. The bus usually sees us, opens up the door, we get on. Sometimes if it doesn't, we just knock, 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 and we get on. And we're not taking any more time. The bus is stopped anyway, and it's so convenient for us. Please bring our bus stop back.
Thank you. We will definitely ask Vermont staff to look into it, and we will get back to you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lino Stracuzzi.
Good evening, everybody. I'd like to thank you for your time from this testimony. My name is Natala Stracuzzi. I'm with the Coal Garden Tenant Association from 2800 to 2808. There's five buildings there. I'm here to the Metro Advisory Board to ask them to reinstate the bus stop, the W8, W6 on Jasper Road on 2800 block of Jasper Road, Southeast Washington, D.C. There was no public discussion on discontinuing this route. This is public transportation, and the citizens do have a right to voice their opinion on this matter. I was at the last meeting we had in Ward 8 with the Mural Bowser and a number of other people, and they wanted to get rid of it then, and I spoke, and I said, why should I have to walk up the street to save 5 minutes for somebody that wants to get home quicker, based on the fact if I want to go downtown, I take the metro, it doesn't cost me as much in parking. On top of that, we have a great amount of children and residents that use that bus stop. And what's it called? In the area we are in, it's not as safe as other areas. So there's a safety concern that we want to actually think about the children and the people that are living there. Now, some other people told me that they feel going up and down that hill is dangerous in the evening coming home late at night. And I tend to agree with them. Now, in front of the church, the stop never gets used. But in front of the other, our stop does get used. Because we got on 12th Place there, you have it stops at the building on the corner by Bruce Place, and then it stops at the church on the corner of Jasper and 12th. So I think it's very instrumental that we bring this back. And we just put a $10,000 bus pad there last week. And I'm sorry, why would we even spend the money to put a bus pad in, on the road right there in Southeast if we're going to discontinue a route. So I'm here to appeal with you to have you reinstate this route on the 2800 block of Jasper Road. And it's clearly been put there, and why our route was discontinued without any notification, it boggles me. Thank you. My name is Natalia Stracuzzi. I'm the Vice President of the Coal Guard and Tenant Association, and I'm hoping that you will reinstate our bus stop immediately. Thank you again.
Thank you, and somebody will get back in touch with you before our next meeting.
Ms. Laura.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Jen. No, Madam Chair, I just want to thank both of these citizens for coming to us about these issues. And we can work with them in order to help resolve these issues, particularly with the WMATA board. And I really want to thank them for coming and bringing data. I'm a data guy and very important. Thank you very much.
Ms. Laura Massimone.
Hello, I'm Laura Larimore. I'm back again to talk about the Blue Line. On August 15th, the Blue Line was completely shut down by Metro, and so all the Blue Line riders, including those who were already in the system, had to be diverted and could not take the Blue Line. People who were already in the system were not offered a refund. Several people called and asked for one and were not given one. And one of the things that Metro has said with the decrease in Blue Line service is people should take the Yellow Line instead. Everyone on Blue was forced to do that when they shut the Blue Line down, including myself. And per the Metro train operator's instructions, we went to L'Enfant. At L'Enfant, it was incredibly crowded. As we went down the escalator, I was packed on the escalator, and as we reached the bottom, I realized within a few seconds of being able to get off that, in fact, there was no space on the platform at all. So the escalator was coming down. It was dumping people off on a crowded platform. Every person was coming down the line of the escalator and smashing into the person in front of them who could not get off the escalator. You could not move backwards because the escalator was completely full. So the escalator continued to run. People at the top had no idea what was going on. They had no idea they were descending into a dangerous situation. There were Metro police on the platform. They were unaware of the situation. It was incredibly frightening, and I think it underscores the issue that we need to have reasonable Blue Line service because we cannot force all the Blue Line riders to be diverted to other stations in the system. The system simply can't handle that many riders being diverted. We want them to be spread out through all the different stations. I just wanted to share that with you. It was a very scary situation. It's the first time I've ever truly thought that I could be in really serious physical harm and danger. I was slightly injured as we all smashed into each other. It was not a good scene. But I did want to just bring that to your attention that because we've had these Blue Line cuts, it's definitely a concern that you can't divert people to other spots in the system. And also when you have to have a train malfunction that you have to recover from, it's very hard with the 12-minute waits. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. And I assume that you all have all left contact information because there may be some more information that we may need. And also, we want to get back to you with responses to your concerns. Thank you all. I hope people have had a chance to take a look at the agenda. Are there any changes that we need, or can we move the agenda be approved as written? Well, hearing no objection, we're going to move forward with the agenda. The next item is the approval of the past meeting minutes. They were sent out in advance. I know I did read them in detail and got back to James with a few minor edits. So I would we like to have a motion to approve the minutes as accepted, or any approve the minutes as accepted so we can have a discussion if necessary. Okay. Is there a second? Okay. Any discussion, any changes, any comments? Okay. Hearing no discussion, all in favor of approving the minutes as written or as submitted, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. The next item of business is the introduction of new RAC members. Caroline Kim, who is a new member from the District of Columbia, was here last month and introduced herself, and I've asked the two additional members who have joined us, Deborah McKenzie and Pablo DeStefano, to introduce themselves briefly. So. Can you, she needs to get closer to the microphone.
Oh, can you, it's not working. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was just saying that I'm glad to be here with you guys and members of the community. I live in Arlington, and I've lived there for the last 5 years and started using Metro immediately, originally going into the district from Arlington and now going out to Fairfax. So I also use it for pleasure going down south. So I've kind of used the whole system, and I'm really excited to be able to be a part of maybe helping, you know, the community interact with the RAC board and get some things accomplished.
Thank you.
She's in the at-large.
Right.
Hello, I'm Pablo DeStefanis, challenging last name, I know. My first meeting here, I live in Northeast in Brooklyn. I'm a frequent user of the Metro system, more rail than bus, but a little bit of both, actually. As a matter of credentials, got my first car at age 29 when I moved to North Carolina. So I'm originally from Buenos Aires. I tend to use Metro, I mean, well, the local subway a lot, and buses, and, you know, I really like public transportation. North Carolina, that was very challenging, so I had to conceive that one. So, I'm really excited of, you know, being here, and I hope I will be able to be of assistance. Thank you.
Thank you. And by the way, this is a good time to say that James and I have been working back and forth with asking a template for everybody to do a bio, because it occurred to me, okay, we now know about three new people. They don't know anything about us. So we're going to try to put that together in a document to be given out either at the next meeting or before the next meeting. So we'll do that. The next item on the agenda is a presentation on the customer care initiative from Lynn Barasox, who's the assistant general manager from the Office of Customer Service Communications and Marketing in WMATA. Yeah, there should be slides in there.
And I will point to these because I think as we get deeper into the slides, they become more intricate, more detailed. They're a little harder to see on the screen. And so you might want to refer to your printout. So I appreciate the opportunity to come this evening and talk about our customer care initiative. And I want to take you back for a minute to where this began. You'll recall that the board of directors, as part of the strategic goals they set for WMATA, included a specific customer service goal. And I'm shortening it by saying that it's to meet or exceed our customers' expectations. That was followed very soon by a customer value statement that the board adopted. And some of you who are not new will recall that that was prompted by the Writers Advisory Council. There was quite a lot of discussion about the customer value statement. The board adopted two statements. One is the longer version, and just for brevity's sake for a slide, I used the shorter version that they also approved. And you'll recall that this was the RAC's effort to help the board define what it is that we should articulate as the value that our customer presents to WMATA as part of our mission. So what we've done, and what I'm going to talk to you about tonight, is formed a beginning of a way to implement the customer service values, the customer service objectives that we set now within the structure of WMATA. Some of these things will come as a surprise to you because they're so basic that you may assume that they already were in place, but in fact they weren't. Some of these things may be a little bit more amorphous, and I'll try to define them and certainly answer any questions as you go forward. But essentially, what we're doing here is trying to overhaul how this organization perceives customer service, much in the same way as we've done with safety, and really reform the safety culture here. And we have borrowed from some of the successes we've had in safety culture transformation in trying to think through how we make WMATA a very customer service-oriented agency and improve on what we have today. Let me just, as a quick refresher in for those who are new, also share with you some of the steps we've already taken. So the most important facet of customer satisfaction, we know from our research, is the reliability of the service. And as you know, the safe and reliable service that we offer on trains and buses and on Metro Access requires massive investment. We have this $5 billion capital program that is investing in making all of our services safer and more reliable. And that involves infrastructure improvements, it involves new rail cars, it involves new buses, it involves rehabilitation and replacement of escalators. You're familiar with that Metro Forward investment program. I call that to your attention because it's probably the most important thing we do to make the service reliable and therefore meet our customers' expectations. So that should be noted. The second thing we did is we established a metric in order to track customer satisfaction. Historically at WMATA, it was a matter of measuring complaints. You know, we'd go to the call center, which I manage, and we'd say, okay, how many complaints came in about this issue? Well, that's not really a very good metric because you don't really hear from everybody, and you don't hear from everybody on every issue. And I will tell you that at the call center, just because of the way that people use various types of media, we mostly hear from bus customers. Rail customers tend to more air their views on social media, not call the call center. And the call center really doesn't take as many complaints as it does calls for information. Where's my bus? Is my bus scheduled to stop at this time, on this day? So they're more in the information distribution business, so that wasn't a very reliable metric. Instead, we looked at what other transit agencies were doing, and we set up a pretty complicated set of metrics that all roll up to a customer satisfaction metric. And it looks at how customers view reliability, service on time performance, how they're treated by our employees, including station managers, bus operators, transit police, and so forth. And all of those numbers, while they're disaggregated, roll up to one index number. And we measure and we track that as part of our Vital Signs quarterly report to the board, and it's made public, and it's on the website. And so we set this initial 84% target by creating a baseline. We established the baseline over a year, and we found that bus and rail largely was at about 82%. The general manager said, well, if that's what we're doing now, we need to do better. So we want an achievable goal that we can stretch for. And so the first goal that was set was 84%. And what we imagine is that each time we meet that target, we'll be able to move the needle and set that target a little bit higher as we go forward with the annual business plans that WMATA puts in place. So how have we been doing in the past year? Well, we started with a series of actions some of you will remember called the General Manager's Customer Service Action Plan. We had over 100 initiatives. It was everything from addressing customer injuries to improving announcements on trains. And in many of those instances, we have moved the needle, we have seen improvement, and with respect to onboard train announcements, for example, we are seeing in our customer research that we've gone from, in some instances, in the 50th percentile around understandability and clarity of messages to around 70-75% understandability. So we're seeing progress, we're seeing improvement there, but we have a way to go. That's just one example of the 100 initiatives. But beyond those 100 initiatives, which it took us about 2 years to complete, We wanted to see where to go next, because we really need, as I said in the beginning, to have a cultural change around how the organization perceives customer service and work towards it. So the next thing you'll see here is a SWOT analysis. Did I pass it? Here we go. So the SWOT analysis is how we first looked at what we needed to do. We looked at our strengths, our weaknesses, our opportunities, and our threats. And, you know, I won't take the time here this evening to review strengths, but let's just look at weaknesses, because that's really the area that we're focused on. Historically, as I said, customer care was not institutionalized. What does that mean? So would you be surprised to know that not every job description here at Metro includes any discussion of the customer service expectations of the job? That's a pretty fundamental thing. As an agency, you have to articulate to people what you expect them to do as part of their duties, roles, and responsibilities, and you have to be clear about that in order to hold people accountable. So that's one example of the things, when I talk about institutionalizing this value, that we're looking at. Second, seniority determines placement in customer-facing positions. So whereas in the private sector, if you were really good at customer service, you might get a customer-facing position. Here at Metro, your years of service determine your ability to select a position. And so those with more years of service get those plum positions, not necessarily those who perform with the greatest customer service skills. And so that's a challenge for us. Employee engagement. So we don't have a 100% engaged workforce. We have people who say that they are concerned about communications and recognition. They don't always feel that they get recognition for good customer service. They don't always feel that people who aren't as good at customer service are appropriately called on for it. They think that we need to communicate better internally about customer service acts and expectations. So that's one of the issues that we have, is you can appreciate that if your workforce isn't fully engaged and committed to customer service, they're not going to be able to deliver that. So management can talk about it, but employees have to deliver it. So part of our analysis was to try to figure out how we could get there. We do have some salary compression issues that we discussed with our board. So if you are a frontline employee and you get overtime, you might not be incentivized to become a supervisor because you might not want to give up that overtime. That's what a compression issue is. You could move up in the ranks, but by going to the next level, you might actually make less money. That's the way it works. And so you don't always attract maybe the people into supervisory positions that you really want. So that's a challenge. And then, of course, internal communications are a challenge for us because unlike an organization where everybody comes into an office every day, we're spread out around the region. Bus operators come in and clock in at their garage. They don't really interact with corporate. They're out in the field. They're driving a bus. Train operators. So we're spread out across 18 different garages. We're spread out across different divisions. And it's very hard when people aren't sitting at a desk every day and you can't access them with email to communicate the same message to 13,000 employees every day. And remember, the people that are in this building, JGB, and at the Carmen Turner facility, only make up about 1,200 of our whole workforce. The remaining 12,000 people are out in the field repairing buses, getting trains on the railroad, running trains and buses, working on tracks. So they're not in an office where we can easily access them every day. So those are some of the challenges that we had to address in our game plan. Here's the game plan, or at least the beginning of it. In terms of the first wave of actions that we felt we needed to take, we prioritized a couple of different categories. We looked at what we heard from our customers through our research and through our outreach. We looked at the customer value statement that you all provided to the board and what they finally adopted. We talked to our own management employees, and we did focus groups with our frontline employees who deliver service every day. We did focus groups with both employees who are recognized for delivering superior customer service and those who have had more challenges with customer service in the past, so that we could hear from everybody what confronts them every day as they try to provide good service to our customers. And from that, we took away a couple of different mandates. On employee engagement, you'll see here that we are working on improved communications throughout the agency. We're working on a recognition program that rewards outstanding customer service, that doesn't leave it up to individual supervisors to recognize, but says that Metro recognizes you, just as we do for safety today. And we need an improved training approach. So today, when you come into Metro, you get trained to do the job that you were hired to do. And that training is very thorough and very good. But it doesn't necessarily involve customer service if you're not a frontline employee, and it doesn't necessarily continue to train you through your years of development at Metro. So we're really looking at a concept called Metro University, and it's just our shorthand. It basically says, okay, from the day you're hired and you go through new employee orientation to the day that you're promoted to a manager through your whole leadership development track, what does it look like? How do we train you? How do we prepare you to succeed? And what are you trained on as regards customer service? I will tell you that new employee orientation, when I came on board 4 years ago, really didn't discuss customer service. It was all about safety. Today, that's changing. Safety's still there. It will always be fundamental for us. But now customer service becomes part of that conversation from day one. New business tools. This is a second category. The station managers really brought to our attention when we were looking at this the fact that today they are the intake channel for a lot of customer concerns. The heat and air conditioning isn't working in the station. The PA system isn't working in the station. The gates are broken. The fare vending machine is out of service. They hear all of that. And as station managers, their job is to report that and to get that on the list to be fixed. But they're challenged by the fact that there's no feedback loop to them that says, here's the status of those repairs. Here's when it's going to be fixed. Here's what you can tell your customers. And so under business tools, we've talked about now putting together a report that's by station that station managers and others up the chain in rail, for example, can look at to see if you're at Metro Center and you're, you know, what's the customer experiencing there? Oh, there's one fare vendor down, there's one escalator out of service, and the HVAC isn't working. Today, in Metro, there would be three different departments dealing with those three different issues, and we wouldn't necessarily know that at Metro Center all three of those issues were happening. The station manager knows, but we need to know that in order to deploy the resources to fix it. And we need to give the station manager feedback so that he can pass it along to the customer. So we're talking about putting together some internal products, some tools and reports that would help us improve that communication. Increased security is one item under customer satisfaction I want to touch on very briefly. Security comes up as a customer satisfaction issue in most instances for our bus customers. It becomes even more important based on the communities where they board buses and alight buses. And so having increased visibility of police officers in those communities and on board buses and the implementation of closed circuit cameras in sensitive areas, very, very important to our customers. So we're working on their security perceptions and realities as part of the overall customer care plan. So, you know, not just looking at, this is not just about, is somebody nice to me when I raise a concern, but what is it that you're doing across Metro in every aspect of the service, including security, to make me feel like I have a safe and reliable experience when I'm traveling on the system. So how are we going to implement some of these categories? This is the slide that I was saying you might want to look at your print copy, because the rocket for success is pretty complicated. Let me just tell you that this tries to capture all of the different categories where we're doing work, from the vision and values being communicated from the top. And so what you'll see here is that the general manager and his executive leadership team, of which I'm a member, will be going out in the field, will be talking about this issue, will be communicating about the importance of customer service throughout the organization with a branded campaign that we'll launch this fall. Training reforms. We talked a little bit about the new employee orientation and the concept of Metro University, and that's here. Reengineering human capital strategies. So literally what we've talked about with the head of human resources is that every single job description at Metro, even those that are 30 years old, needs to be updated. And we need to clearly articulate in job descriptions exactly what the customer service expectation is in terms of their ability to deliver that. After we've done that, then we'll work on accountability. Every single employee here needs to be evaluated, and part of that evaluation as a mandatory matter is going to be, how do you perform relative to customer service? And in that way, we can look at employees from the front line all the way through the executive staff and have a way to measure how they're performing for our customers. And by the way, customer service can also be internal. If you're a support agency and you are working in support of an operating department, that internal customer is just as important. Station teaming, we talked about some of the business intelligence tools, but really trying to come up with a concept for supporting the local station folks and local bus folks more effectively from the corporate side. So one of the things, again, I say we're borrowing from some of the safety success. One of the things that's been very, very effective for WMATA on the safety side has been local safety committees, so that people can bring together at every level of employee here concerns that they have about safety, and those concerns get addressed at the local level. It doesn't have to go the whole way up to the general manager. It stays local. It gets addressed locally. We want to do that with customer service, too, and have local committees that say, here in our area, whatever that may be, here on the red line, we have these sets of issues, and they get solved at that local level, because I think you have to empower people at every level to be customer service focused. And then enhance SLM. So the street management on the bus side, they're doing a lot already and putting together a program to have more regional folks out on the streets supervising and supporting operators, not just looking at bus bunching, but looking at the issues that our customers are telling us about, like bus bypassing a stop, failure to stop for customers. Why is that happening? When is that happening? And holding operators accountable. And then the last slide, which I just want to touch on quickly before I take your questions, is to explain how we're going about this. So we formed an executive-level customer care steering committee that will guide this entire process. We have a customer care office now. It works in my department, customer service, communications, and marketing. We have a woman who's staffing that, Barbara Moulton, who had a similar job at the MBTA in Boston and did a similar campaign. She brings their best practices with her. We've looked at the best practices of other transit agencies around the country, from BART to SEPTA, looking at just taking coast to coast, looking at what they've done, what's worked, and what hasn't. And then we formed some subcommittees. And this is really important. We decided that in order to achieve this kind of change, transformational change, if it was just seen as a customer service department initiative, then it would just live in my department. Rather than to have that happen, we put together an interdepartmental working group. And that group, and you can see the subcommittees on this slide, that group has everybody in it. It's HR, it's labor relations, it's metro access, it's performance management, it's rail, it's bus planning, it's the parking guys. Virtually every department in the organization is participating in these committees, so that this change happens across the organization and it's truly cross-functional, and that everybody owns not only the actions but the results and feels a level of accountability for delivering them. We have a 90-day calendar that we're putting together now that we're going to be sharing with the general manager in the next few weeks. That 90-day calendar has a set of actions on it that we want to accomplish by the end of the year, and then it's our expectation that we'll be briefing the board of directors on that progress in January at the customer service and operations committee meeting as the chair has requested. So with that, I'm going to take a break and answer any questions you have or take any suggestions you have. This is a really good time for you to make those suggestions because the committees are still putting their plan of action together, and we can take your ideas and include them as we go along.
All right. And Pablo and Deborah, just to tell you what our custom is, usually if people want to speak to a thing, we put our templates up. So if you want to do that, I call it templates, nameplates. Okay. Sorry. James.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some quick bullet questions, so I don't want to dominate the time that the other members have questions. My first one is every employee of Metro on a leadership track? Even if you're just a mechanic, is it possible that one day you could be the head mechanic? That's one. Number two, when you talk, and I think this is a good idea, creating local customer service station committees, are you looking at that in terms of like Friends of the Library? You know, you here in the district, you have each library branch should have a Friends of the Library type of thing. Are you looking like Friends of the Station, Friends of Gallery, well, not Friends, but, you know, Gallery Place sort of committee, that sort of thing? My third is has there been any discussion, and this may be something not in your jurisdiction, about body cameras on on officers? I'm just asking that. And the last is that, and this is great, establish employee recognition program for outstanding customer service. Are you looking at possibly doing a banquet luncheon model instead of just going to the office and handing somebody a plaque and something like that? Thank you.
I can take some of those. The body cameras at MTPD, I know there's national debate about the effectiveness of body cameras on police. I can't answer your question today, but we'll get back to you through the chair. The local committees, we hadn't contemplated Friends of the Station kind of concept. The initial concept was to have our employees meet locally to try to solve local issues, but I haven't ruled that out. I think it's very interesting, and it's something we could look at as we go forward. Just getting our employees talking about how to deliver better service for customers is our first objective. The leadership track does not exist today, the one that you described. It's not automatic that every employee is on a professional development track. It is the goal of our HR department to change that. And that will be part of this discussion, because it's my view that in order to be on a leadership track, you not only have to demonstrate a model performance on safety, you have to demonstrate it on customer service as well as other skill sets. And the recognition program, yes, it would be an organization-wide recognition program. I'm not sure what form that will take. The subcommittee meeting on that will create the program itself, and we'd certainly take any suggestions you have about what's worked that you're familiar with. But I think that the bigger the recognition, the more incentive there is for people to want to be associated with it and to feel good about delivering good customer service. So I think bigger is better in this case.
Mary Ann.
I wanted to say thank you in terms of you saw some of the questions that we had, and I appreciate the way that you answered some of them in your presentation. A question that remains is around the KPI, and I understood you to say that it's sort of amalgam of a bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. If I read the Vital Signs report, it sounded like the information is obtained through a phone survey. Mm-hmm. So I'm still a little bit trying to understand, and the question had been before how is the phone survey working? Because I remember a question about cell phones versus landlines, right.
It's actually going very well, and what we've done is we've included cell phone lines in our phone surveys, and that's important because we find that among certain demographic populations, particularly younger and lower income folks, that they often have a cell phone instead of a landline. So we're able to access a broader demographic spectrum of our customers using the cell phone access. The phone surveys are periodic, they're random, and they're a scientific representative sampling of our customers. We find them to be highly effective within a couple of points, and we use them consistently in order to trend data over quarters. And that reporting happens in Vital Signs in quarters. And this is a much better, much more sensitive, and much more complicated set of data that we can collect than we used to through complaints alone. Complaints still factor into our look at customer satisfaction. And when we provide the information back to the operating departments and to the general manager, we show them complaints, we show them how complaints are trending by station and by bus route, as well as the survey data that we collect through phones.
Mm-hmm. Out there.
Hi, thank you so much for coming to speak with us tonight.
in terms of the changes, I have a few questions, and some of them seem rather kind of symbolic, like the job descriptions. But I mean, I think if you're in trying to encourage culture change, it's important to send that kind of message about priorities. I think the business tools are kind of fantastic, and I can see that really making a more concrete difference, especially with how frustrating it must be to not be able to answer questions, customer questions at the platform. Is there a timeline on that, and what kind of stage are we in for that?
Right, so we're in the design stage, and what I will come back and tell you once we have our 90-day plan in place, finalized, is where we'll be at the end of 90 days. I don't anticipate having all the business tools that we want at the end of 90 days, but I do anticipate having at least a preliminary report that aggregates the data that we have available to us by station. So we're literally meeting with IT and the railroad in the next week and 2 weeks on design to make some decisions about what data sets we have access to and what can be aggregated and how long that takes to generate reports.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I have two related issues, and they're around the Metro University concept. One of the other boards I sit on is a homeowners association board, and for a staff of about 40 people, it's a very large homeowners association. And we have incentivized their professional development courses through other services that provide them. I guess what I'm asking is participation in the Metro University going to be rewarded with promotion and salary increases, things like that? Like, is it going to be connected? You know, that if you take a certain number of Metro University courses, you would, you know, be prepared, be in line for a raise or be in line for a promotion?
So it's still in development, and it would be premature for me to say conclusively what that is, but I think that the way we think about it is that it would, that Metro University training work would prepare you and qualify you and put you in a better position to compete for certain promotions and assignments. So, you know, if you had taken a class in budgeting and you had taken a class in management and you had taken a class in Metro's operating rules, you know, you would be able to better compete for the next job up on your, you know, development path, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Whether that will be mandatory or required or they'll use it as a reward system, that hasn't been determined yet. But I do know that what we're trying to do is equip our internal employees with better skills in order to move up to the next position in the chain. Because often, and I'm sure this has certainly happened at other places where I've been, you may be familiar with it, either at the HOA or in other places that you're familiar with, but people often get promoted because they're technically really proficient at what they do. That doesn't necessarily automatically make them a great manager. And so I think what we're trying to do is say, what are the other skill sets that you need to move into management to really be a great manager? And for me, one of those is to understand safety, customer service, legal requirements, and budgeting. You know, when I think of those things, that's what you need to be a really great manager. So how do we equip people with those skills? Because if we really want to move them along inside the organization, there's no place to go outside to really get that. Because what we do is highly specialized. So we want to try to provide that as a way to retain talent here mm-hmm. and to make sure that we're promoting talent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And one suggestion. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of problems with my cell phone and my computer, and I call tech support like at least twice a week for each of them. I think the tech support people are the model for customer care.
That's
because people call complaining, angry. I know I'm one of them.
You mean our IT help desk? Is that what you're referring to?
No, you're talking about...
No, I'm talking about my cell phone and computer. I'm saying whatever training computer people and cell phone people give their telephone operators is the model
right.
for...
which provider do you use? If you don't know, is there happen to be...
Dan.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm very impressed. You guys have really looked very broadly, but also very pragmatically. I really liked where you were explaining the slides, what it really meant, what it meant, you know, what the sentences meant in terms of the employees' jobs and their experience. I would just humbly ask, give you the following advice. You guys have opened up a lot of areas that you could move forward on. So maybe at some point, and you're probably already doing this, you need to sort of be able to do some kind of cost-benefit analysis on all these things, and not just cost from a monetary point of view, but also bureaucratic difficulty. Maybe that would help you target better within each of these areas two or three things to really work on or expend your energy, because I'm sure you're not that many people and your budget is limited and you want to show bang for the buck. So at the very least, you could start where you think it's going to be a better return, or where there's, you know, a certain department is really more amenable to it than another. But no, I think it's great, and I think you already have a good idea what needs to be done. So I'm really impressed.
Thank you. That's very wise counsel about prioritizing and trying to maximize the efficacy of a couple of things.
Barbara.
Thanks for putting a lot more meat on this subject for some of these, because the Customer Service Committee, as you know, was looking at the presentation, and we were really struggling with what re-engineer human capital strategies and other such things really meant. You know, what, and so you've done a great job of doing that tonight. I just have a question about, I wrote down toward the end, you said you're putting together a 90-day calendar for what you want to do before the end of the year. And I wasn't positive if it's you're just putting together the calendar before the end of the year, or you're putting together what you're going to do by the end of the year.
The latter.
You are going to try to get some things done. That's great. Glad to hear that. Thanks.
Karen.
I actually have four questions, but two or three you can follow up by email at a later date. But I wanted to know who participated in the SWOT analysis. That was my first question. Second question was about the customer value statement. You mentioned that it was adopted by the board. So I'm curious to know how that's being promoted through WMATA. And my third question was about the KPI data. Excuse me. You mentioned that there's a lot of issues and complaints through social media, and I'm curious to know if Metro is actually looking at this and tracking it as part of the KPI, because I think that's really good information to track. And my last comment is about the Metro University, that I thought it might be really great to incorporate a formal mentoring program as well. If you talk about, you know, promoting and retaining talent, I think mentoring is an absolute great tool to try to use.
May I try to respond? Okay, so on the SWOT analysis, it was led by Barbara Moulton, but we had participants from all of the departments that I described to you: rail, bus, customer service, labor relations, the police department, and others. It was the interdepartmental working group that we've had, the customer care interdepartmental working group that's second on that tier, all participated in the SWOT analysis. The customer value statement will be part of the internal communications campaign that we launched this fall that rolls out to the entire workforce, and that'll be one of the things that we point to as a way of articulating our values. The KPI data, capturing social media, is an excellent question. Today, we do respond to a lot that we see on social media. We take some of those questions offline. We direct some of them to the folks in the call center. We do some via email. We do a lot of posting on social media where we see a trend of questions building. You know, if we see that five or six people are having the same question, we'll post the answer so everybody gets it. Capturing that data is harder to do. And what we're doing in looking at our next generation customer relationship management software is looking at CRM software that allows you to incorporate social media into the data. So just as we track every complaint that we get, and then we give it a case number, and we can go back and say, Susie Smith called us last year with a different complaint, and this year she has this complaint, The newest generations of software that are out there also allow you to do that with your dialogue on social media. So we're looking at that in the scoping process right now, and hopefully when we go out to competitively seek bids on that software, we will make progress in that regard. But we don't do it today. And as for mentoring, couldn't agree more. Would love to see that as a formalized part of this. The other thing we believe in here that we've had some real good success with is coaching. And in rail in particular, I think Mr. Ballard, who directs rail transportation, talked about the coaching, the coaches that they've brought in to work with his team, and how very effective that's been into helping guys who have very deep railroad technical experience become better managers through the assistance of coaching. So mentoring is great when you have a peer-to-peer opportunity. Coaching is great when you need to introduce new skills, I think. So we want to do a combination.
Bob. I have one question and then one comment. Are the Metro Police, are the expectations for the Metro Police Department different than for the remainder of the system employees in terms of customer service?
Yes and no. I mean, they will have the same standards and the same level of values introduced into their culture. Because they perform a slightly different function, they are challenged to be both a community policing force, and sometimes our police, as you know, the customer who talked about the Blue Line emergency, they're there performing a customer service role in addition to their public safety role. So they're very mindful of that. And so we have to amplify their customer service role even more. But because they have that duality around customer service and public safety will always be first for them. So yes, the chief is very committed to being more customer focused in terms of service delivery, but he will also have to create some balance around public safety. Does that answer your question fairly?
Yeah, I think so. I just want to compliment Metro. This weekend, I was taking the Metro from the Red Line from Grosvenor downtown, and the Red Line was closed between Grosvenor and Friendship Heights. And I thought the customer service from Metro employees, getting people on the shuttles and off the shuttles and not being on the platform, and a lot of smiles and a lot of well-posted signs, I thought it was a really good example of great customer service.
Thank you. That's good to hear.
Bravo.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. It's really pretty nice and comprehensive. It resonated to me what you said about the closing the loop information.
You need to get closer to the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
At least for me.
Bring it closer to me. There we go. It resonated what you said about closing the loop on the issues that are raised to station managers so they can get that information. And maybe, I don't know if you consider something like a scorecard, not something that or maybe could be public, but something that would be a good feedback for them. So it's just not at the incident level, but they have some idea of performance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that can also serve to distribute that information. You mentioned one of your challenges is not having desk jockeys, right? People that's all day on the computer, but rather people distributed maybe across a station that also use those managers as a way to distribute that information on mm-hmm. customer service performance.
Thank you, it's a good suggestion. One of the things that we're trying to figure out is what the delivery mechanism is for station managers mm-hmm. Because cell phone use is very highly regulated within Metro in terms of employee using cell phones. And station managers are in kiosks sometimes where they have access to a computer, but other times they're roaming in the station to assist customers. And so trying to give them a mobile application, we're going back and forth around, does it need to be mobile, does it need to be desktop, in order to give them the best tool and the best information. So I appreciate the scorecard idea, and what we're trying to figure out is how to deliver that information.
Right, okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Lorraine.
Thank you very much for coming to give us this presentation, first of all. Then I want to make a question regarding the Metro Police, the safety security issue. as we were talking about the Metro Police, if it's within like a metro station or its surroundings, I can understand, you know, the jurisdiction. My question is more jurisdictional, because if we're talking about putting police officers in bus stop areas that are dangerous, or however, you know, we want to call it, that we've had more problems with, that would be a jurisdictional issue, wouldn't it? And then how would we work that with Metro Police, you know, for operational purposes?
Right, so the police department, our police department works very closely with all of the jurisdictions, and there are joint task forces, there are shared resources, and there are divisions of responsibility. Typically, what happens is the Metro Police Department does any bus rides that need to happen and does anything that's in the immediate vicinity of the bus stop. And beyond that, it tends to be jurisdictional law enforcement. And so they work together to target those communities where there are problems in crime, and to try to have a presence that's visible, or in some instances use plainclothes folks to deter and stop crime trends. So there's a constant coordination there between our police department and local jurisdictions, and as well as the federal law enforcement agencies. As you know, there are more than 30 different law enforcement agencies here in the district alone. So it takes intense coordination on an ongoing basis.
Okay, but in other words, we would have a tandem of, you know, several entities.
And we do today. We do today. If you, for example, I board at Shady Grove every morning, and I'm very likely always to see Montgomery County Police in Shady Grove Station. We don't say, oh, it's our station, so it's only our police department. Montgomery County Police are in and out. Sometimes the state police are in and out, depending on what's going on that day. Okay. So it can be a shared thing.
Thank you. Deborah, and that's the final question.
That's an interesting comment you made about the law enforcement. Thank you for coming here. And I'm a frequent Metro rail rider. Sometimes I notice something's going wrong on the train. I would get off the train, I memorize the serial number of the car and their door number, entrance door, so I report to a chaos manager. For example, they were fighting or arguing, or there was a bag was left on the seat. I don't know if they managed a follow-up on that. So you may want to include the topic for employee engagement or customer satisfaction. I don't know which box it belongs to see how well the manager responds to the concern that the writer reported to the manager. I don't know which box it should fall under. Is that something that you want to train, have someone to train them to be more attentive to a concern of the writer?
You know, Deborah, that's a really good point. And I think that we have not thought that through, and we should. We've thought about people complaining about systemic issues, and we certainly do track criminal reports that come out of the station, crime reports that are then relayed to the police department. But I would have to think a little bit and talk to the committee about how we know if a customer has lodged that kind of a complaint with the station manager, and then how we would follow up to make sure the station manager relayed that properly. I'm just not sure what the source of that information would be, but I like the idea very much, and it would be great to have that metric available to us.
If anybody has any further thoughts or questions, please send them to James, say, let's say, by the end of this week, and he'll get them to Lynn. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry, I know we're running a little bit over on time. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go on. We'll use discussion material. Thank you. And next on the agenda, we have Tom Randall, who is the director of the new electronic payment project system. and he's going to talk to us about this new and improved way of paying for our rides, at least at the rider level.
No, it's on. You can hear me now. Okay, thanks. Thank you. It's great to be here, and kind of with the theme of a bit of biography here, I'll explain who I am a little bit and where I come from. I've been with WMATA now since the end of November, just 10 months here, and hired to lead this program forward. I came from Minneapolis, where I implemented a similar system, not as good as we're going to be here, but with the existing provider as well that operates the current WMATA system, Cubic. So I've worked with them for over 8 years, and my past was in the finance and computer systems and that type of activities as well. So this is quite a joy for me to be here operating with this project and with all the people and this system. It's just been a whole lot of work, but very, very fun too. So that's where I'm coming from. So our new electronic payment system, it's nice to be here. And in my first presentation, so if some of this seems a little redundant or a little something you've been through before, you can let me know and we can maybe address some other things in the questions as needed. But I wanted to make sure we had a base level of understanding.
No, you should go, because it's brand new. Some of us mm-hmm. came to the joint AAC a meeting and heard some of your presentation. I didn't. I've heard it at the customer care, but we've not heard it at the full RAC or any committee meeting of the RAC.
So. Okay, great. Well, this is a great place to start. And first thing we wanted to start out with, and a lot of the why do this? Well, why change? Well, there were some goals, of course, and one of them was that the existing equipment and systems were leading edge in their day, but that day is initiated quite some time ago, 30 plus years. So there's a reason to replace the hardware and software that exists today as far as making the system more reliable for all the customers to use. Make it a little bit easier to use as well. People can understand it a little bit better, a little bit easier. And more cost effective. And when we talk about costs, there's a number of costs. There's certainly, if we have to maintain the equipment less, it'll cost the authority less money. But something that's easier to use for all our customers, it reduces our customers' cost or effort in using the system as well. I'm not proposing fare decreases here. That's not part of this system anyway. But it'll reduce or increase the ease of use for customers, certainly. Self-directed and decentralized, we've seen a lot of this in banking. You can use a website to do just about everything. And in airlines, you can use the website or print your own tickets or carry them on your phone. And that's the type of system that we aim to direct our efforts towards with this new payment system as well. Some facts and figures here. We're working with 11 agencies, and there's, over 400 million trips per year. And it's really quite amazing. The system has over 87,000 potential combinations. We use a lot of those, not all of them, of course. One bullet point there, the funds on card. It is a proprietary system, and what that means, it's a system built around one manufacturer, one provider. And so we're anything we get or anything we do to this system goes directly back to that one provider. This is maybe an analogy would be if you have a computer at home and you want to get a different printer with it, well, you can't. You just would have to use that same type of printer for whatever computer you have. And that was the model of systems and computer systems at one time. But I think we all know that that's changed quite a bit. And so this will help us change in fare collection system as well. Over 8 million cards in use and 2 million active. And I was just talking to our chief information officer, and he says we're adding at least 7,000 cards or registered users per month, every single month, which is an awful lot. So the system is still growing, and more people are using it, and it's needs to handle that extra capacity as well. There is an established retail network where people can add fares and buy cards. I think there's about 260 outlets, whether company stores or CVS's or those other locations, and we will improve on that and make it much more convenient and easy to purchase fare media. Smart Trip is well known as a regional brand, so we want to build upon that reliability that's there today. And also, the current state, as I mentioned, it is a challenge to maintain the state of good repair. Imagine it's really has a lot to do with computer systems, and nobody in this room has a computer system that's 35 years old but still operating, et cetera, or even 15 years old as the bus systems are today. So they've worked hard, and we have an extraordinary group that's maintained these systems and enabled it to continue on this long. But at the end of the day, they decide, well, it's time to move on to the next generation, if you will. So we're challenges, again, with rider expectations. I'll just go over briefly over some of these. Now, based on retail and mobile, that's their experience with paying for things, how quickly we can do it, either at any type of store or with your mobile phone or anywhere else. The common message I hear, and which was common in Minneapolis as well, is why, when I load value to my card on the website, do I have to maybe wait a day for it to show up or possibly longer? Why that doesn't happen anywhere else, you know? So we're going to change that with this system. These things are going to be just as readily available as your Amazon account or anything else. The proprietary system, as I mentioned, has limitations as to what we can do, what we can program, and how robust the system is, and we'll have a lot more capacity to do many, many different things with the new system. And we'll provide more options and expanded options for accounts and the type of media you can use to pay your fares. Perhaps even a Capital City bike token can be used as a bus token as well as a bike token or to ride on the fare. We're talking to those individuals right now to see if we can arrange some cross-functionality that way, but it is all possible. So make it easier to pay fares is generally where we're at. For tourists, commuters, other events, people can use what they have, whether it be a government ID card, a credit or debit, if they're contactless cards, or there are NFC, that stands for near-field communication. Those types of phones have existed in one form or another for over 3 years now. You'll be able to use those on our system as we move forward. Further savings can be realized as we manage these activities, and potentially, other programs, offer loyalty programs or promotions or those types of things, because all these things are configurable now, will be as they aren't today. So this gets a little bit technical, maybe more so, or maybe not enough, depending on who's around the table. I'm not quite sure. But the open architecture retail sales model, and what that really means is when you go into any kind of store, you could say the same card reader there, whether it's some Giant Foods or CVS or any place else, they all kind of have about the same kind of card reader. Well, we could have that same similar type of situation, not use a proprietary technology. Again, we want to improve the reliability so those systems are working when customers want to go through the gates or tap on the bus. And of course, we'll be using new media, and we've always wanted, there's so much in the news about maintaining security as well. So we want to maintain that security. PCI refers to an industry standard for payment card industry compliance security. The EMV is something just recently you might have been hearing about in the news with some of the breaches. That's another standard that the card companies and the retailers are going to enhance security. We will be, of course, enabling both of those methods when we implement the new system. Non-proprietary leads us to lower costs and easier to be upgraded. Now, I did, if we're a little bit off, we're not off yet, but I've inserted a couple slides here just at the last minute, and James was kind enough, I think, to insert them in the presentation. So if we get a little mismatch, that's the reason why. This is what the new fare gates will pretty much look like. They'll be stainless steel, modern, not too many things to read, but easily identifiable whether you can enter or not. The bus card readers, the onboard payment targets that we'll be using in the pilot program are essentially looking like that device on the left, and they will be operating in addition to the Smart Trip cards for some time, Smart Trip readers on the fare box. We haven't located or decided on the fare vending machines yet, so that's just a prototype is listed up there right now. I like to show this side because all this processing, all this activity, if you're not aware, today when you add $20 to your card, to your Smart Trip card, it really gets on that microchip that's on that card, and you're carrying it around with you all the time. So different from your credit card where everything is handled elsewhere. So with our new system, the new electronic payment system, all those activities will be handled in the back office by a big computer. And it's called the V-Block. That's a picture of the one that we're implementing for the pilot. And it's all put together there. All this activity will be handled by that one. And when we roll out into final production, we'll have a couple of those because it will be handling all your transactions in real time and failing over to another unit if needed. So quite a breakthrough. And again, there's more pictures. And this will affect the park and rides as well. So I've got a small picture there of, we'll have a card reader on the parking lot device as well. We've been working closely. This is a slide that came from the original contract development. The regional operator advisory team had a lot of input into the initial selection, and we're continuing discussions with all our regional partners as far as the pilot and the implementation, because it is all one system and we want to maintain that seamless transfer and use of fare media across the entire region, of course. In the future, of course, we see mobile all the time, mobile phones, mobile other devices, playing a significant role in transit payments, and it will be here as well. Create a customer account. You'll securely identify the account, and then all your information will be on the back office system, so it'll be stored securely and easily updatable and changeable and all those kinds of things without that day or two delay that would take to get it perhaps downloaded to your card through the machine. Accept payments via the customer media that you're carrying, again, whether it's a smartphone with a near-field communication chip on it or a contactless bank card or any other media, as I mentioned, a fob or a token. Really, it needs to be there's a certain standard that's out there, so as long as it fits within that standard and it has a unique device number on it, we can essentially have you register that and become a customer as well. And, of course, reducing costs. I just have one slide on the timeline. I'm not sure how well that's showing up, but we can, if it's not too good, I'll send out these paper copies as well. We're starting the pilot program, which will run for between 3 and 6 months. That's going to kick off in January of 2015 with a limited pilot group, about 2,000 customers that are linked to the stations and the bus routes that we'll be piloting. 10 mezzanines is what we're going to use, and about 50 buses. And I think we have your contact information. We're going to be recruiting customers for that pilot activity to make sure they match pretty much our regular customers or our customer profile, customer population. But I wanted to invite this group. We'll send out a notification that any special input, we want to segregate you off as kind of the power users of the system, if you will. And So if you're interested in that, and when we announce the pilot stations, which we'll announce at the Customer Service and Operations Committee next week, if you're interested in that, we'll give you the opportunity to participate in that pilot and provide special feedback, maybe through this forum or another, so we can get your ear and see how the system is reacting to you. Again, there's only going to be 10 mezzanines or about 50 buses, but I hope you'll consider participating if it would meet your transit, you know, ridership patterns today. Those will be coming out soon. That pilot program is intended to test out certain technical functionality. Boy, does the system react? Does it open the gate fast enough? Does it process your transaction fast enough? Is it accurate? And does it meet the reliability standards that we need to operate a system? Assuming that all goes well, and I assume it will, we'll end that pilot in either April, May, or June of 2015. And between that June time and you'll see up there it says phase deployment. And that's when we start the initial phase deployment of the rest of the system. You'll see it doesn't start till 2017. Now we're trying to pull that in so we can gain those benefits faster. But since the pilot isn't testing all the functionality of our old system, we're not testing the smart benefits, we're not testing all the fair products in the pilot, we'll need some time to build, design, test all those other systems. And right now we're planning on that gap between the end of the pilot and the start of the eventual rollout to develop all those things and make sure our system is solid and all functions are working as intended before we actually roll it out into revenue service. So it'll be a phased deployment. We'll expand the stations, but the systems will be operating in parallel for some time. I hope to implement the buses first. We hope to implement all the buses first because the smart trip readers on the fare box will remain there, but as you saw, we have a different reader which we'll put in a different place. So any customer could use that bus without worry about whether to pay their fare. The rail station gates will be a bit more of a challenge because we don't want to exclude all the customers that are still using the smart trip and only take the new customers. We want to allow time to transition, but we're working through quite a detailed process of how we can accommodate customers, potentially have some dual readers on the gates so people can transition at their pace, but still with an effort towards moving to the new technology as rapidly as we can. Those are all the slides I brought for today. I'd be glad to address questions as I could or take any other comments for this program.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I let the last meeting run amok, and I, you know, gave people ample time at the first presentation to ask questions, and Lynn gave responses. Here's what I'd like to do, unless you start to throw your nameplates at me. And she would. Okay. We're going to have 5 minutes of questions. One question to each person, and if it's not urgent, please contain yourself, because what I would like to suggest is that hopefully some of us will participate in the pilot. And it seems to me that after that participation period is over would be the time for you to come back and or for the people who participated in the pilot to really give us the benefit of their thinking, et cetera. So I want to keep these questions to a minimum, and if you can contain yourselves and restrain yourselves, hopefully we can send the questions. And again, we could send the questions to through James by Friday. So with that admonition, because the reason I'm saying this is because we have two action items that we need to get through tonight. I'm going to yield my time so we can get through those. So, and I'm going to use Pablo. He's got the first.
Thank you. I'm going to change my questions to issues of mild concern, simply. Some things I would like to see here. One is privacy. When you mention linking my phone, I mean, my smart trip is quite linked to me, my phone even more. Mm-hmm. I would like to know that you guys are keeping that in mind, particularly when you mention promotions or anything else you do with that. The other one is regarding the volume of data that you have. And I don't know if you have any open data initiatives within MATA. But it would be nice. I mean, I know you do some nice magic on the site. I'm sure that people out there would like to, you know, help with that. So consider that. And the last one, since you mentioned changing the gates, we'd like to see more intelligent gates, you know, reversible gates, things like that that I know you can do. That would be great to see in our presentation. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan, I'm going to. I'm sorry.
Thanks for the presentation, Tom. One question.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any advantages of the system that we have now versus the system that we're going to have, or is it all better? And another phrasing of the question is, are there any risks in going to the new system? Is there any way in which the system we have now is better than the system that we're moving towards?
Thank you. That's a really interesting question. I would say definitely the benefit of familiarity with our customers is something that will be a challenge for people to move on to a different system. System works pretty good. I mean, it processes a lot of passengers every day, works pretty good, comparable to most other systems in the country. That being said, there's always risks in introducing new technology, and it was a calculated understanding as we move to this new technology that there can be some hiccups along the way, but it's proven in many ways, and we have a lot of confidence in our implementation, and I think at the end of the day we'll have, I really believe this, the best system in the country, and we will appreciate it very much compared to the system that's in place today.
Just one follow-up. Is the ultimate goal then phasing out the Smart Trip card altogether, or is that always going to be part?
I'll answer that, Madam Chair and committee member, in two portions. The Smart Trip card, actual physical card, for the most part will be usable on the new system. We won't have to replace all the Smart Trip cards. There's one vintage of Smart Trip card that was issued so long ago that can't be converted to the new system. So those customers. Eventually, the Smart Trip system, as we know it, the back-end processing or those readers, that will go away. That will go away and be completely replaced by the new system eventually. And I want to emphasize the phased deployment of that system. So it's not happening overnight. There's no panic. Existing cards, most of them, a lot of them, will work in the new system.
Candace, I'm sorry, I missed you.
Okay, I just have a couple of quick questions because technology is not my strong point. So I'm looking. Oh, it's on. It's up. Okay. So my first question is this new machine for the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be like sort of positioned still at the front? Like where on the bus would this go? Because I'm trying to look at it in comparison to what we have now. Sure. And how that would work, because in my mind I can't like visualize it, I guess.
We have, Madam Chair, Committee Member, we have looked at that long and hard since the day I came here. That's a really good question, and it's gone through a lot of analysis. We want it to be consistent for customers, consistent across our fleet of buses, of which varies quite a bit, actually. So we're trying to locate it close to the fare box, or at least in the same position. We're looking at attachments. Just minimally attached to the handrail, perhaps, so it can be located in any bus, or mounted on the floor next to the fare box right now, but it'll be visible. It won't interfere with the driver's vision or the operator's vision, and a customer can expect it to be approximately in the same place each time they board the bus.
And so this eventually will replace what's on the bus currently, correct?
And that's two parts as well. The fare boxes will, there'll always be a place to pay with cash on the bus. That's not going away as part of this project at all. But the target that's tapped on that fare box, that will be no longer operable for a payment card anymore, eventually. Okay. They'll operate in parallel for some time. But eventually the payment target will only be the other device.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so on this box, you can't you can add money to your card or no on the new one?
That's one of the changes with the new system. And as we expand the retail network and make it a lot easier and a lot simpler to add value to card, the loading of the cash to a card on the bus, that's one of the functions that will be phased out over time. Okay. Still accepting cash on the bus, and I think we're working on some really great solutions to allow customers to add cash easily, mm-hmm. conveniently as well, but taking but that's one of the functionalities that will be phased away.
Okay, good. I'm sorry, can I just get one more? No. It's a simple question. I think maybe everyone else understood, but it was just about the V-block. What does that mean that the chip inside your card no longer matters? Is that what that means?
The chip inside your card will matter as far as one component of it being a unique identifier number only relevant to that card. And it'll be recognized in that back office system as being only your account or your card, and that's how it will operate in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one thought. I think it would be very helpful for future presentations if you were to list the functions of the current systems and then list a comparison chart that would sort of show what the current system does and then what the new system does, and then if there's a third column, then you know, show the changes. I think that would kind of be easy to capture because you're obviously going to be doing a lot of presentations, mm-hmm. and I think that would be very helpful. Bob and Deborah, and that's it, folks.
Whoops. How do you propose to integrate the employer fair subsidy process into the new system?
Oh, thanks. Yes, definitely a very important process. We couldn't go anywhere without that. It won't be implemented within the pilot. The Smart Benefits Program, I think you're speaking of, it won't be implemented with a pilot because, again, in the pilot we're testing certain technical functionality. But in that, you see the design, build, test area over those year or 2 years, we will implement and transition all that activity. So it will be almost invisible I won't say that. It'll be visible, but it'll work just as well as it does today. Yeah. That's a key functionality that we need to support.
I just wonder what percentage of the regular riders, get employer subsidies. Do you have any idea?
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah,
one.
That's a question that probably some other part of Metro can ask.
We know that. I just don't know
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
as I sit here right
but
now.
I don't know that.
I just wonder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Deborah, and then that's the last question.
I have a question. Are you be able to come up with the idea of have a model filled with a fair machine, vending machine, and during the time that the new machine brings faced it in, so people can see and learn how to use it, how to add cash, or how to, to verify the payment. Can you come up with the idea of have a model vending machine? Because there's some people may not be technical aware of the vending machine. Can you come up with that idea?
Thanks. Let me just repeat so I make sure I understand your question. It was, can we come up with a scenario to enable people to maybe practice on a machine that exists so they can learn how to operate the new machine kind of thing? We are working on that as we speak, training videos on many things, and I'll take that back to see if perhaps in a customer service center or elsewhere we could set up a model machine to have people come in and practice. I'll take that back and see what we can do. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. If anybody has any burning issues that they want to questions or issues or comments on the presentation, please send them to James by this Friday. And thank you again very much because I'm sure we'll be hearing more. And look out for the email that invites us all to be part of
there
the.
You go. Yeah, thank
what
you
did
for
you call
your time.
It? The power users. I've got to remember that.
Okay.
What I'd like to do is just to take a kind of a show of hands. How many people are willing to stay until 8:40 or can stay until 8:40? Well, let's put it this way. How many people have to leave at 8:30? Okay. Then let me try to do this. All of the items that we're only going to do two items because these have to be done this meeting if we can. We're going to do the two action items. One is Dan Turk's 3P committee proposal on the mid-city south line, and except for the new mid-city bus line, north-south bus line. And that should, is that in the package? I don't see it. Oh, it is. I'm sorry. And with apologies to Deborah and Papa, everybody has seen this in some form or fashion, probably at least three times. It basically started off being 610th Street. It is now, through the efforts and work on it, changed into something more. And I'll turn it over to Dan to say whatever he needs to say about it. And the goal is to approve this and to send it to the WMATA board.
Thanks, Carol. Yeah, we've gone through this various times electronically, and then I think we spoke about it briefly. I don't know if it was last meeting or the meeting before that, where there were some comments and we incorporated them. As Carol told me, this isn't really the best time to go back into the details. So I would just like to give you just the general purpose of this, to give the WMATA board an indication from us that we consider the congestion at 16th Street and how it's affecting bus and everybody going through there important, and not just as a problem for 16th Street, but a lot of the parallel corridors as well, Georgia Avenue, 14th Street. So the solution needs to be looked upon as that whole macro corridor. What we're really just asking is for WMATA to work with DDOT in getting the study that's been a little delayed going in terms of actually coming up with more substantial solutions for the corridor. In the meantime, doing as much as they can with smaller, less capital intensive solutions. And then also making sure that WMATA is working with all the important jurisdictions, including Montgomery County. So that's all this is. If there are any comments or if there's some text that we can change, I'd be happy to address that. But like Carol said, we have been through this a few times, and I don't think we're trying to pull anything on anybody. You guys, I mean, I know a couple weeks ago I distributed this to everybody as well for your comments. I didn't receive any. So with that, should I make the motion, Carol?
Yeah.
I'd like to make the motion for the approval of this resolution by part of the RAC. Mm-hmm.
Second. Catherine seconded. Okay. Is there any discussion? And I would just say this much, that Matt, what's the name of the first of the director of DDOT, who is a member, who is an alternate director on the WMATA board, looked up with interest when this whole idea about the 16th Street corridor came up at the quarterly meeting where the RAC leadership team met with the WMATA executive committee. And so he arranged for his second-in-command from DDOT to come and make a presentation, if you'll recall, last month. And in the meantime, the Triple P committee was working and it thus expanded its resolution to broaden it from 16th Street to all of those corridors, which impinge on each other and impact each other. And also, another significant thing that was added is the idea that this is a good opportunity to work across the local jurisdictions, because these lines, all of these lines originate in Maryland, correct? 16th Street, I mean, or they go through Maryland, 16th and Georgia Avenue do. Right, okay. So that's sort of like the text or the context behind this.
The other thing is we had one long meeting with, I forget his last name.
Jim Hamron.
Jim Hamron, who runs the buses here for Metro, and he is in full support. And we really tried to phrase this, and we gave him a chance to comment as well, as another way of looking at this is us supporting him in terms of really getting the board's attention on bus issues in this particularly important one. So they're definitely on board with this as well, and there's nothing that is in here that would be of surprise to them.
Candace.
I guess all I really want to say is that I'm in full support of this resolution because I think it needs to happen at this time. We are seeing a large number of problems on like 16th Street Corridor, 14th Street Corridor, and Georgia Avenue. And I think they're trying to implement things slowly, but some of these things have taken many, many years, and it shouldn't take that long because there's certain things that they can do now. And so I think if we nudge them a little bit, they will do those things. So I just want to say that I'm in full support of this, and hopefully we get all yays tonight.
Barbara.
I just want to clarify, is this going to the board and to staff at WMATA or what?
Well, the way I would do it is we would send it to the board and CC the WMATA staff. So they would all get it.
All the relevant?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing is, after five times reading this, I noticed that the very first word on the page is misspelled. There's transposed letters.
Well, that would be Carol's fault. Because
That's the least of what I'm blamed for, the biggest thing I'm blamed for. Where's the
subject?
Subject, yes. That was me. Okay. Okay.
Good catch.
Okay, Pollyanna. Okay.
James, did you catch that? Okay.
Okay. Is there any further? Oh, Bob, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, if there's no further discussion, I'm going to call the question. All in favor of sending this to the board from the Riders Advisory Council? Any opposed? Abstentions? Great. Our second action item is from the Customer Care, no,
Service.
Customer Service Committee. That's chaired by Lorraine Silva, and this has to do with a signage proposal. And again, Pablo and Deborah, the WMATA is engaged in the early days of a complete overhaul of the signage system to be phased in around 2018, hopefully to be phased in in conjunction with the delivery of the second part of the Silva line. And we had an opportunity to have a presentation, and this is our opportunity to formally comment on it. We had given comments on it informally when the presentation was made, but this is an opportunity to give formal commentary on it. So with that, I turn it over to Lorraine.
Okay. This is basically what you have in the package here, is basically we took in all of the comments during the presentation, and we summarized and analyzed them and prepared this document that actually the second page is in the other side.
Oh, yeah.
The intention in the left blank, yeah, it was the other way around. I just want to know if anybody wants to add or change anything or has any comments on it. As I said, we took in from the recorded, from the audio of the previous meeting. Thank you. We tried to put in everything that was commented on that day and whatever also was sent via email. So if there's anything that you may have forgotten, let us know now, because then if this is okay, as we will submit it to the board with your approval.
You may speak. I may speak. Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, my only question is: does this go to the board or to the person that made the presentation, sort of first, and the board?
I would send it to the board, and my thinking is when you send it to the board, I mean, and I think it needs a closing, you know, a closing polite paragraph thanking him for his presentation, and, you know, it gets the board's attention and lets them listen in, or, you know, permits them to lean in on some of our concerns early. So I would send it to the board and a copy of the applicable Ramada staff would be my idea. And what I would do then is to have a closing paragraph that kind of says, acknowledges his presentation and, you know, gives a little bit of, right.
Lorraine, I think this is great in terms of having a comprehensive summary of our comments. If this is going to the board, you might consider like making a summary paragraph at the top that maybe highlights a few important things. I'm not sure that they're going to be reading the whole thing, or maybe, I don't know, you highlight a few things. I don't know.
I think this is about as summarized as it's going to get. I mean, because it's in the early stages, and I think what we just want to say is we think more work needs to go into the conceptualizing. I think if you wanted to summarize it in one sentence, that's what we really are saying, is don't lock in on this, on these cardinal directions and let that be it. Is it? Right. So does anybody? The only thing that I had concern about, and again, I guess you all have decided not to include my comments. I remember that there were two members. Huh?
They're in here.
They're in there?
Yeah. They added them.
Where are they?
Tell me what they were again.
We're getting punchy now. Okay. There were two comments that really stuck with me at the presentation. One was that Bob Fogel had pointed out that he thought the signage is fine, well, and he thought that the resources that Metro was preparing to expend on signage could well be expended, or perhaps better be expended, on station manager training, because they are the keys. Where is it?
It is in here.
I'm sorry. It goes to.
Well, I know. Here you go. I'm sorry. There are two pages.
Okay. I didn't realize. Now I see why you say it so long.
Between the two.
Got it.
Got it.
Got it.
It's there.
It is long, but I think it's okay.
It's right there.
Okay. Okay. I'm fine. Somehow I didn't see the second page. It is long, and maybe what I would suggest doing is that we could put a cover letter on it that just simply says these are extended comments, et cetera, about the signage.
Well, I think the important thing you said, Carol, is just that don't lock in anything. You know,
yeah,
I think we can
we trust the committee working with the RAC leadership team to put an appropriate cover on this? It is long. I thought it is a long document, and maybe we just need to put a cover on it that sort of says what it's about. Is that agreeable? It's up to you all. I could go either way. Okay, then let's do a cover letter.
It just seems like the main points, I think I kind of understand what Dan's saying, is that they come later, and I think that needs to be brought to the front in case people are going to read it in a cursory manner.
Okay. Playing devil's advocate, which people hate, is isn't that really what your resolution, you had all the whereases first and the things that you wanted were the last one.
And there were a lot of whereas.
Before
true.
Dan blames me on that.
No.
That was mine too. Okay.
But you, what you wanted them to do was at the end. And I mean, I don't have any objection. It's just
let me put it this way. The things over a period of time, the things that I've heard the WMATA board be the most complimentary about are the airport accessibility working document, which was rather long.
Like 20 pages? 15 pages.
You know,
that was essentially done mostly by Ben and the committee he had it. And the lighting accessibility study, which I have never actually physically seen, but was also a very long and technical document. They have praised that in several venues as, you know, being the kind of thorough staff work that they want to see. I mean, it's almost as if they're saying we, a volunteer group, okay, you know, are supposed to produce the kind of work that a paid staff does. So I would say, now that I'm thinking about it, based on that, I think we should let the document go as stands, because it is well organized, and, you know, some people like to have it up, the conclusion up front and then go backwards, and some people like to do it the other way. I think we should let the document stand now that I think about what they found enchanting in the past. Well, I think that your last sentence, we are happy to provide our feedback on the signage proposal and look forward to further involvement as the planning continues, sort of gives us an opportunity to weigh in as the, Deborah.
By the, this is only draft. Now, if after we give the feedback, are you going to type it over without the word draft?
Oh, the magic of word processing and our RAC staff coordinator, yes. Yeah, it'll be on RAC letterhead and all that doodah, okay? I think we should let it go. And Barbara, frankly, had mentioned something at the beginning, so let me just throw it out to the group. One thing that we're sending is a resolution with all those whereas stuff, you know, that I use the format. I mean, I took somebody else's writing, basically, and used the format that the board uses in its resolutions. You know, if we want to change that back, that's fine. But I don't think there's anything wrong in having the two separate documents with two separate formats.
I'm fine with it. You may want to take advantage of the next time you speak with the board to ask them, get a little feedback on this format.
That's an excellent idea. Pretty much every
presentation if we want
to. Yeah, and then in case they have a question about why we did both. Yeah, that's a great idea. We'll do that. Okay. Is there any more discussion on the content of the document? I'm ready to call the question. All in favor of sending this resolution? I thought Lorraine did move. You didn't move this?
No, I didn't move.
Can you make a motion? Sorry, then I thought we were discussing based on a motion.
I would like to make a motion that we approve this document. We take a vote on the document as is and approve it to send to the board.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Marianne seconds it. Okay, since we had our discussion prematurely, I'm now calling the question. All those in favor? Opposed? That's it. Hey, we're finished early.
Carol, can I say something?
Yes.
We have a PPP meeting. I even forget myself what that stands for. Program Projects and Planning Committee. I'd like to extend a welcome to everybody, especially the new members. One thing we're going to talk about is the presentation that we just had on the new electronic payment system to see if there's any role that we could possibly play, given that we have a lot of advantage that this is not the cows haven't left the barn yet. This is good timing to really have some input in it. So I'd like to welcome you guys all to that meeting on Monday.
I can summarize everything I was going to say. First of all, we have had a resignation of yet another member, Dexter Williams, who was an appointee from the District of Columbia. And since it's so late in the year, Loida has decided that his replacement will be rolled into the usual end-of-the-year reappointment. The second thing I wanted to tell you is that the bylaws have gone to the General Counsel. I was expecting a copy of them to be in this package, but you'll get them. And so I want to thank Karen and all those who hung in there, and you will get a copy of what was sent to the Office of General Counsel.
I also just want to say that I think we've started to even make some progress recently with the buses, because they've changed basically they've added some of the expander buses on 14th Street, which is a huge step, and they were supposed to do that like 2 years ago. So the fact that we're having this discussion and it's already producing results, I think is just, it proves that what we're doing here is important and that we have to continue. So I just thought I would let you guys know.
Yes. Oh, you mean here in this room or here in this building? We'll something will go out.
It will be in this building. If you check online, it will let you know what room. Yeah.
Okay. I've checked. There's something that's going out asking for some dates. So can you respond to that?
Yes, ma'am. That's actually summarized in your follow-up item sheet. At this point in time, we have contacted many of the individuals who commented at the previous RAC meeting, and we've contacted them to identify a location to hold that meeting. But we have identified a time. We're just waiting on a location and a finalized date. Yes, ma'am. Once we finalize everything, then we will send that information out to the entire RAC just so that they have that information whether or not they choose to attend. Okay. You're welcome.
Anything else for the good of the order? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I need a motion.
Okay.
Is there a second?
None.
Thank you.